At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is Gamertag Radio.
All right, this is Paris. I am still here at Gamescom day two, but I have something I've been very excited to talk about, and that is the blood of Dawn Walker. And I have someone here to talk about it. Thank you for taking a few minutes to talk to me.
Talking to us.
Yes. Yeah. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Of course. My name is Mateusz Tomaszkiewicz. I'm a creative director at The Blood of Dawn Walker.
Yes. Thank you so much. So, full disclosure, I actually got to see this a couple weeks ago in Los Angeles, but at the time, I didn't get a chance to talk one-on-one about the game. So I've already seen the presentation. It's fantastic. And my first question is, why this concept? If you can kind of explain the concept of Dawn Walker and what people can expect when they play the game.
Of course, The Blood of Dawn Walker is a dark fantasy game that is set in 14th century Europe in this fictional valley of Vale Sangora that is set somewhere in the European Carpathians. There are a number of reasons for why we went with this concept. We were excited by vampire stories and the hidden world kind of, you know, concept that there are more things to than the humans know about what's going on, you know, the conspiracy theory thing vibe going on, but in medieval times because the medieval stuff is kind of something that we are well acquainted with. Like, we know a lot about it. We know that we could pull it off and make it cool. So it seemed like a natural fit for us. Yeah. And we had a lot of know-how on how to do a lot of things like sword fighting and so on and so forth. So it looked like a natural pick for a studio like ours, where we had a lot of that expertise.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we had a number of ideas that we wanted to check out and try out. Like, there is this concept that the game is based on, that is, we call the narrative sandbox, which means we wanted the game to maximize the player's agency. So you can do as many things as you want, the way you want to do them. But at the same time, retaining high quality of writing, storytelling, and like these, you know, cool custom-made quests that we are known for, right?
All that sounds fantastic. Now, actually, just let's jump into the main character first. So kind of talk about the main character and we'll go into from there.
Yeah, of course. So the main character, Cohen, he gets turned into this creature early on in the story that we call the Dawnwalker. And it's not exactly a vampire. It's not fully human anymore. So he basically turns vampire at night, but he can still walk in the sun. The big thing, though, is he gets a different set of abilities during different time of the day, right? So during the daytime, when the sun is up, he uses magic, for example. He doesn't have his vampire regeneration and so on and so forth. He is still a skilled warrior because his father taught him to use the sword.
Right.
Again, he can use magic, which can be very powerful in our world, different hexes and like different combat techniques. He gets access to things like questioning the dead by using spells, right? Which can open up like quest opportunities and so on. And in the nighttime, he fully changes into a vampire and he needs to feed on blood. He gets all these powers like the vertical traversal with the shadow step and plane shift, which is kind of like walking on walls, right? And so you get access to all these areas that you couldn't access as a human. As I said, there is a downside. You have to feed on blood. Your health doesn't regenerate automatically. And if you're not careful enough, you can even, if you keep him hungry, it can lead to certain important NPCs dying even.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, if you enter scenes, like with him being really hungry, and there are indicators in the game, you will be able to tell. He might lose control and just kill those people. And we allow the game to kill off some really important NPCs, majority of NPCs, so you can cut off entire quests sometimes if you're not careful.
And I think that's what really intrigues me about what you're bringing into this is the fact that sure, the entire quest lines, the story can change because of a fact, like you kill off an important NPC.
Yeah.
So even along those lines, like I love essentially the day-night concept of during the day you're a human, you have certain abilities that you already address, then you have the vampire abilities at night. So even from a story standpoint, can you tackle any quests? Like, is there specifics like, I have to do this as a vampire or I have to do this as a human?
It really depends on the context of the quest. There are some quests that are exclusive to the time of the day. Uh-huh. So there are some that are night only and day only.
Okay, okay.
But majority of quests you can tackle any way you want.
Any scenario you want.
And it basically changes how you play through the quest. Like you could see in the demo that we were showing, you get to access different areas. Sometimes you get solutions that you wouldn't get in another way of playing. You can also mix and match. Like you could do part of the quest in the nighttime and another part in the daytime. So you can play around with it, right? Yeah. So this is what we mean by narrative sandbox, and it really ties in nicely with this day and night concept, right?
Yeah, I really love that. One thing that during the demonstration we got to see that really intrigued me about this is, how do I want to describe this? Basically, the way time works, because obviously you're trying to rescue your family, and there's only so much time.
Exactly.
So certain quests require... Okay, this is going to take a certain amount of time but others don't. So can you kind of explain that?
Sure. So generally speaking, when you look closely at the UI and the materials we released, the clock is like divided into segments. And you'll notice that these segments don't fill up automatically. So if you stand still for 10 hours of real time, the time doesn't pass. And the reason we did it like this, it's because we did something we called time as a resource. So we treated it as part of the game. Mm-hmm. We wanted to give you, the player, the full control over how the time passes and how do you want to spend it. In order to do that, we had to kind of eliminate the normal clock. So there are segments for the night, segments for the day. Once that fills up, you switch to the next time of the day, right? So to the nighttime, for example. And the different types of content will push time differently. There are some quests that are larger, you know, and they might push the time a bit further. There are smaller activities that will consume less time. Also, sometimes there are branches in the quests and choices in the quest that might consume more time than the others, right? So for example, in this quest that we were showing, there was one objective where you had to get to the library. And there was the long-winded way of like doing the quest for this guy, so he lets you in. But you could also like just find your way in illegally, let's call it, during the nighttime as a vampire, right? And it will take you less time to do this. So you can think about it strategically and figure out your own ways of completing these objectives that will consume less time. Sometimes maybe you want to bribe someone instead of trying to convince them. Sometimes you might want to try to avoid interacting with certain things to do a different way, right? And it's really up to the players, right? But one very important thing about this is like we always very clearly telegraph. We are putting a lot of effort into this to telegraph it to you. So you feel like you're in control and you know which actions will push time forward and which won't, right? Okay. So you can make these choices consciously because again, we want it to be a part of the game. We don't want to ambush you with it at any point, right?
So let's talk about the open world a little bit. So this is an open world RPG, you can go do whatever you want. Now, from a story standpoint, is it linear? Can you tackle basically, you can attack this any way you want, approach it as far as getting to the end of saving your family. Yeah. But if I remember correctly, that isn't the end. You could technically fail the mission of saving your family, but that would be the game goes on.
Like, we don't think about it as a game over. It's not a hard deadline. I mean, it is in a way, but the game will move on and it will change significantly. So you might want to try it out if you want.
Yeah.
It's up to you. Do it at your own risk, right? But yeah, generally speaking, open world wise, after the prologue of the game, we let you out into this world and you can tackle the objectives any way you want. A lot of the big quests even are not like handed to you from the get-go, right? You kind of have to find them. So for example, certain factions you have to figure out how to get to and like if you want to cooperate with them. Or, you know, you can decide to just go at the castle, like build up your strength and just attack the castle on your own and rescue your family. It's really up to you, right?
Okay.
However, interacting or not interacting with these different plot lines might have consequences.
Okay.
So be careful about that also and keep it in mind. It's not just about you and your family. It's this because the guy that took your family, you know, he rules this whole valley. So the way you do it might also have consequences.
Now, speaking of the open world, as far as just things that you'll encounter, what we got to see during the demo was a lot of human enemies, some vampires as well. But are there other things out there in the world that you'll encounter?
Yes, definitely, definitely. There are other things to encounter. Some of them we already shown in different materials. Mm. Like in the material you might have seen, there are these creatures, for example, called Uriashi. They are these creatures from like a Carpathian lore. Basically, they live deep in the mountains. They're like beast men. And they were hiding from humanity because like in wars... long past, you know, they were almost eradicated by humans when the humans expanded. And now they're back, right? Because Brensis took over and he saw them as these strong warriors that could help him. And he convinced a number of them to join in, come out of the shadows. So you have Uriashi, you have kobolds that live deep in the mines. Vale Sangora is full of mines because it's rich. The mountains are rich with silver, you know? So the miners dug deep and sometimes too deep, of course. Right. You have these. And there's a number of other creatures that you will encounter. Sometimes, some of them we gave you a sneak peek in different trailers also. So there is more stuff to encounter. And another really important thing about this IP, I would say, because right now, of course, we are building the Blood of the Dawnwalker.
Right.
But we're aiming this to be like start of a saga. So the team did a lot of really good and hard work to build up the IP with more things than we needed for this first game. So we, on purpose, we are holding back with some stuff that we want to expand upon later, right?
Would that be vampires. Things that you potentially would tease?
Yes, and exactly.
Like maybe. So, and this leads me into this. So you kind of touched on it a little bit. Is this based on any real world mythology or lore that's already out there?
I mean, some of it is. We take some stuff like the Uriashi, like the kobolds, which were present in different cultures. Mm-hmm. Of course, we mix it a little bit in our own way. We have this deep lore that kind of informs a lot of the design choices, which again, we will not like reveal fully. We want people to have their own theories and so on, right? But absolutely, we look into the folklore. And in this case, the Blood of the Dawnwalker, again, it takes part in the cups. But the next games might, explore other regions of the world, and definitely we'll be looking at the different folklore from these regions to bring the familiar that people might recognize, the cultural heritage of a specific region, and make it our own, like twist it in a way that fits the lore and kind of explores it in interesting ways.
Right. So in other words, you're not beholden to the actual lore. If you need to tweak some things for the game, you're open.
Exactly. It's the same with like the vampiric lore, for example. Like, it's been present in the pop culture for so long. Like a lot of these myths people know by heart by now.
Right.
So we paid attention to twist it a little bit in our own ways, right? So it fits, again, this deeper lore. Like, for example, the way you create a vampire is very different in our game. You actually have, like, the vampires, you know, they grow teeth their whole lives. And some the very old ones, like Xanti, they can grow the teeth in very weird places.
Oh, wow.
Like, upper head, not just the mouth.
Yeah.
And the way you turn someone into a vampire, you actually have to break out one of these fangs, and you have to embed it in the victim's heart.
Interesting.
And if the tooth takes, then the victim will become a vampire. But sometimes, like in Cohen's case, in a weird tangent direction,
okay.
In cases of, like, sometimes it can even turn you into this monstrosity. Like, we have these Murani that you can also see in the demo. It's this feral vampire, right? That's, like, its visage, like, it's twisted, like, in some unnerving ways. And it's, like, completely feral and not in control of their actions, right?
Okay.
In Cohen's case, his transformation went badly. Or like in a weird tangent, which actually gave him some advantages over vampires, right? Because he can walk the sun.
Yeah, he's almost like Blade in a way. He's a daywalker where he gets to do that stuff.
Yeah.
So just sticking with the open world for just a second here, just the size of it. If I remember correctly, we were talking about this at the LA event. Kind of the comparison from a size perspective would be like Blood and Wine from The Witcher.
If you want to look at the size itself, maybe. However, I would say, like, I prefer to use like hours of playtime because it is very dense with content.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to ask. Yeah, so very dense.
I would say for an average player, it should take about 40 hours of gameplay. But I think for completionists, people who want to explore every part of this valley, like check every readable and everything, they can probably spend more time in there.
Now, kind of going into the RPG aspects of this, first of all, there is crafting in the game.
There is crafting in the game. You can craft different consumables for yourselves. Yeah, we do have it.
And weapons, armor, is that upgradable, or is it just you find new weapons, armor throughout the world? I guess what I'm asking is, like, say you get a new weapon, is it
how
static?
Does the equipment work?
Yeah.
I mean, generally speaking, you can find a variety of equipment. We have a number of slots, like you have the chest pieces separately, pants, we have talismans, rings, weapons, of course. Some of them can be upgraded, actually. It really depends on an item. I know this system is kind of in the works still, so I don't want to get into too many details but there is a lot to find. And of course, they have different visuals, so I know some players enjoy, you know, just dressing up their character in different ways, not just for the stats, but also for the looks. So I would say there's a nice spread there also to play with. So
So even that, with the split between being human and vampire, is there certain advantages with weapons or armor that you could get that'll add stats?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Like, so this is slanted towards a vampire, this more towards human.
Absolutely, and not all of it is like linear growth, because sometimes, for example, the armors, we have like heavy armors and lighter armors. In order to use them effectively, you need to build your character build specifically, right?
Okay.
Like, you need to learn how to use heavy armors effectively, for example, right? And we also have these different tiers of quality of items, and that also ties into the character development. So it's really up to you, you know, how do you want to build your character? Because maybe you want to specialize in some direction and not other.
Now, will you be able to respec it all?
I think so. I don't want to...
TBD.
TBD, I would say.
Okay.
But I think I did see it somewhere in the design docs, yes.
Because I guess that's what my main curiosity is, and I do want to talk about combat after this, is, so when I am a human, can I basically spec out as a human, and there's certain gear I want as a human, but then at night, I want to put on different gear because that's going to suit me better as a vampire.
For example, you could do that,
yeah.
I mean, the human tree, it has a lot of perks that revolve around magic, because this is like the unique thing for the human. The sword fighting can be shared, actually, because as a vampire, you can decide to use the claws, but you can still use your sword if you prefer. It still works with the vampire powers. So it's really up to you. You might, the human has magic and sword, the vampire has powers and the claws or the sword. It's up to you. There are different builds you could experiment with. You could, in theory, if you wanted, also focus on playing it as solely as a vampire, right? It's not something I would recommend because it would require you to skip time a lot, which means spending a lot of time.
Right.
I think it plays the best if you mix and match, you know, and have fun with both. And I think this is when the game is at its best. But if you want, you could play it this way as well.
And going into combat, even more specifically the sword fighting. So there will be parrying, things like that.
Yeah.
And is that something that you can upgrade as time goes?
Yeah. You can build on this. There is a skill element to it and a stats element to it, the RPG factor. But actually, you know, went already through multiple iterations and changes after the community feedback. So the core foundation of it is the directional combat, directional blocks and directional attacks, right? So you need to be paying attention to your enemies, like which direction they attack from and where are they parrying and so on. However, I know that there is a number of people that, you know, it feels like a bit too much for them. Mm-hmm. So introduce these omni attacks and omni blocks, we call them. Last thing that you can decide to use, which is, for example, you can decide to block without specifying directions, and it will block the attacks. It will still give you the block. However, it will consume some of your stamina. So it kind of changes the dynamic of the game.
So there's a penalty to it.
Now you kind of have to keep the track of stamina. Mm-hmm. You can decide to use dodges more instead of blocking as well, if you like that. I, for example, enjoy dodging more than blocking. Yeah. But my brother, for example, the thing he does that he really enjoys is he likes doing the directional blocks because he feels good parrying them and like countering them and so on. But then for the attacks, he uses omni attacks. So he doesn't... Actually, he feels better. It flows better for him when he just does these random attacks from different directions without specifying the direction.
So in other words, you're really going to allow the player to decide how they want to engage
with
that. That's great. Now, one thing on that is difficulty. Will there be scaling difficulty levels?
Players can choose difficulties. The number of them we are still deciding, I'm not sure about the enemies themselves. This is something I think we still have in the works because actually we are in pre-beta right now. So we're at the point where we're tweaking the economy and the balancing. So this is something that is being cooked right now.
Yeah.
Exactly. But what we know for sure is that we want to allow you to pick different difficulties and like customize your experience to the degree we will be able to pull it off technically.
And you just mentioned economy because I was going to ask that. that as well. So will there be shops, things like that, where you can purchase these things?
There are different shops, different kinds of shops as well. There are some interesting types of shops also. Because the vampires, they don't like silver. It's one of their weaknesses. The trade of silver is prohibited in the valley. However, there are some people, some smugglers, that want to profit off of it, right? Like buy the silver from people of Vale Sangora illegally and then sell it for a big profit outside of the valley. Right. And if you manage to find these NPCs, you can actually make a good dime on these. So, you know, you kind of can play around with the types of merchants and what they sell.
All right. I'm very excited for this game because I think there's a familiarity to it, but you're still at the same time doing something unique, playing as a human, playing as a vampire. But like, and I guess I didn't ask this already, but like obviously your dialogue choices matter as far as story goes, course. Where you can essentially completely cut off a quest line. Now, how will that act as far as NPCs go? Will they remember certain decisions and that's how they're interact with you? I'm like rapid fire right now, but factions. Are there like factions in the game? Things like that? You can choose allegiances and things?
Yes, there are factions. So you can look for different allies to attack the castle with, right?
Okay.
Or you can do it solo if you prefer. Okay. It is all very custom handmade as we always do it. So there is no like a systemic system that would, you know, give you 1% with that faction or 2% with that faction. It's more like about your choices and how you interact with them, right? And your actions, basically. Okay. But yes, there are multiple factions that kind of exist in that world. On top of that, there is this system we call the notoriety system, which means the more actions you take against Brensis, the antagonist in the game, they will take notice and you'll build this infamy, basically. Okay. And the higher it goes, the more you annoy Brensis and he'll try to counteract you, right?
Okay.
So he can send out more soldiers to patrol the streets or the villages and the roads. He can enforce a curfew, you know, so suddenly people are not allowed to go out. So it's more difficult for you to feed at night, stuff like that. He can impact the economy to basically impose tariffs.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, so it can be more expensive for Cohen to buy things. And generally speaking, this makes him this active antagonist, right? But it can have good sides as well, because it also impacts how NPCs react to you. Like, some factions that don't like Brensis might actually really like your infamy, right? They'll be like, okay, you're cool.
Right, and want to help you more.
Another thing that can happen is, like, some like civilians might be scared of you, actually, because they heard, you know, who you are, and Brensis makes you out to be this villain, right? So they are like, okay, I don't want any trouble with you. So it might be easier for you to intimidate them, right?
So I guess that is one question as far as just the duality of this. Will NPCs know, like during the day, know that you're also a vampire?
So this is one thing where we had a lot of discussions internally. Mm-hmm. What we went for in the end is like, there are NPCs that don't know anything about vampires and, you know, they can't really tell. Mm-hmm. But there are NPCs that do know. And yes, if you go into dialogue as a vampire, they will notice and they will react.
I like that. That's really cool. We'll wrap this up here because, again, I really appreciate you taking some time to talk.
No worries.
26.
Yes.
When you're planning this to come out, PC, Xbox, PlayStation, whole thing. I'm trying to think of just one more because I could talk all day, but I know we want to wrap this up. I'll just end it by saying that what we got to see in LA, I was really excited about. It really has, 2026 is too far away because this is my kind of game. I love the RPG aspects of this. I love the duality of it. But I think the time resource is what I like the most because I feel like you really have to think about, is this something I want to engage with? Is this something I want to reduce the time clock on? And then I know you're not going to really dive into it now, but I want to see what happens when you fail and you go to that end.
Look,
how is that going to play?
I encourage it. Tell us what you think when it happens to you.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, this is what got me excited about the project, why I actually joined the project, because I felt like this is very innovative and different,
yes,
fun to play around
absolutely.
With. Also risky and scary because, you know, there are not many games that try to do something like this. It's very unique, which makes it appealing, but also very difficult because we had to figure out all different design problems that were not figured out, right? But I think in the end, we got something very interesting and again, very unique that I haven't seen before. So like you said, there are familiar elements to it that we used our expertise to recreate. And then there are a lot of new experimental things that I'm very excited about.
That's what I love the most, that you're experimenting, you're trying something new, which I think will be very intriguing for this when it comes out in 2026. So again, I won't take up any more of your time. thank you so much
for
talking to me about this. In 26, I can't wait.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. All right, we're done.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.